During the late 1920s at the University of Vienna, there was a group of intellectuals known as the Vienna Circle. It was a coalition of brilliant minds, logicians, physicists, and philosophers who believed that true knowledge must be grounded in reason, precision, evidence, and clarity. Their entire philosophy and scientific world conception was a brawny rejection of all matters of metaphysics, spirituality, and faith. And yet, as they themselves might have agreed, a perfect circle does not exist in nature. For every circle, no matter how accurate or precise, deviates ever so slightly from its ideal form. Whether it is a drop of water or the circumference traced by the axes of stars, all circles are imperfect. And the Vienna Circle, as brilliant as it was, proved to be no exception. It followed the same inexorable laws of physics they so faithfully pontificated. Professor Heinrich Weber was living proof of that. He was one of the most respected minds of his time in the fields of philosophy and psychology, a rare combination of brilliance, rationality, and humility, a towering figure both within and beyond the Vienna Circle. Yet, despite the reverence he inspired, there was something about him that many found quietly unsettling, a misfit in his brilliance, a deviation from the ideal circumference of his thought. Professor Heinrich Weber was a man of faith, a believer in miracles and the power of prayer. Before every lecture or important meeting with his colleagues, he would pause for a moment of reflection and offer a quiet, short prayer, a prayer that seemed to some at odds with the rationality the Circle of Vienna held so dear. However, no one ever dared to question his quiet faith. It was unclear whether this silence was a result of the profound respect he had earned, or the fact that his faith never interfered with his academic work, or perhaps just the fact that he never spoke of it openly. It was something everyone noticed but chose to ignore, as though the topic itself were forbidden. No one ever questioned him about his beliefs. It was what we could call a perfect circle of silent agreement. But as we have been stating, all circles, even the silent ones, have a slight inherent deviation. A small deviation this time in the form of curiosity. And so, one day, at the start of one of his lectures at the University of Vienna, one of his students raised his hand and broke the circle of silence. "Professor Weber," the student began, "first, I want to say that I am a great admirer of your writing and your work in general. In fact, it is your deep observations about the human mind that inspired me to pursue a career in psychology. But there's something I just can't wrap my head around. How is it possible that someone as logical and brilliant as yourself could believe in, if you'll forgive me, such nonsense about prayers and miracles?" The atmosphere in the class grew tense for a moment, but then Professor Weber, with a glint of wit, said, "Well, young man, speaking on the matters of belief, I believe." He paused deliberately. "Questions are for the end of the lecture, don't you think?" The room burst into quiet laughter. And after a brief moment, as the class settled and the tension eased, he continued. "But I can see that this troubles you, or at the very least concerns you enough to bring it up to me," he said kindly. "And while this may not be the ideal time or place for personal questions, I do appreciate your straightforwardness. So I'll try to give you an answer, though I can't promise it will be as straightforward as you might hope." Professor Weber then took a deep breath and said, "When I was a young man, attending college during my first year, much like some of you right now, my father passed away suddenly. Though the pain and grief of losing someone as important as my father were devastating, it was nothing compared to the overwhelming financial struggles his death left behind, struggles that were objectively measured in the negative numbers of late house payments, debt, food, education costs, and much more. You see, young man, the business of death, you'll learn sooner or later, truly is a business. My father had been the sole provider for our family until that point, and at the time we buried him, we also unearthed countless struggles. Money at home became scarce, and keeping a roof over our heads turned more difficult as the days passed and as the bills kept coming. So my education was a luxury we could no longer afford. I decided to leave college and find work to help my mother with the bills, to keep the house from falling apart. It was the rational thing to do. But when I told my mother of my decision, she looked at me with her unwavering determination and said, "Don't worry, Henry. I'll pray and God will provide." Now, of course, even at that young age, I was a man of reason. I was fully aware of the impossibility of the situation and the odds. Faith cannot keep the lights on, nor put food on the table, nor will it pay for my education. That doesn't make any sense, does it? But no amount of empirical knowledge or scientific method could have ever, or will ever, make me doubt the will of my mother. Besides, I also thought that after the first bill from the university came to the door, she'd acknowledge the reality of the situation, the sour flavor of the truth, and she'd have to accept it. So I didn't argue with her, I just agreed. But that was the way my mother was, always carrying her pain in one hand and her gratitude and faith in the other. Whenever a new challenge came to hunt us down, she'd simply say, "Don't worry, Henry, I'll pray and God will provide." And somehow, we always managed to survive. I remember this as clearly as if it were this morning. It was at the end of my first year as a freshman, shortly after my father had passed. I needed to buy a book for class, Outlines of Psychology by Wilhelm Wundt. That particular time, my mother had just pulled off one of her miracles to pay some overdue bills, and I didn't want to burden her by mentioning the book. I sat at the table near the fireplace, quiet and defeated. And for the first time in my life since I was a child, I set aside my reason and pride, and I prayed. But not for the book. I just wanted the Lord to keep my mother well. I knew she always tried to appear strong, but I could see the weariness in her. She was tired. And I thought that perhaps the Lord could provide her with some rest. And if it wasn't too much to ask, I prayed that he might grant me the strength to finish my studies and make my dear mother proud. It's all I ever wanted. "We'll figure the book out later," I told the Lord in my prayer. Now, I don't claim to know how prayers work, but I can tell you this. A few days later, the book appeared, sitting on the table where I had been praying. Of course, I thought it was my mother, but when I went to thank her, she simply said, "It wasn't me, Henry. It was the Lord who always hears our prayers and who always provides." The entire room was moved by the professor's story. Some of the students even wiped away tears, and a warmth seemed to fill the room, wrapping them in the weight of the professor's words. But shortly after, the student spoke again, respectful, but still skeptical. "Professor, with all due respect, that's a very touching story. But that's not evidence that miracles exist, or proof of the so-called power of prayer. It's obvious that your mother paid for those books, maybe by taking out loans or working extra hours. There was no divine intervention other than her hard work and struggle, and I'm sure you're well aware of that." "Of course, young man, of course," the professor said calmly. "I don't believe that books pay for themselves, nor do I think an angel sent checks to cover the bills of a widow, though that would have been nice. As a matter of fact, I'm uncertain of what miracles are, how miracles work, or the reason behind the dynamics of the universe in general. But one thing I know for certain, only one, young man. My mother, may she rest in peace. She was a true miracle, in the midst of the doubts of my faithless life."